Welcome to AI to AI, that is Appreciative Inquiry to Artificial Intelligence, a podcast series exploring the significance of appreciative inquiry, talent management, ethics and governance in the AI era, coaching-driven habit formation, creativity and adaptability. In today's fast-paced, technology-driven world, organizations must evolve quickly to remain competitive. While many focus on fixing problems, appreciative inquiry shifts the approach to identifying strengths and building on what already works. Combined with real-time strategic change, this enables organizations to make swift, collective decisions while engaging all levels, resulting in lasting transformation. As corporate quality head at Tata Metalics, a subsidiary of Tata Steel, I had the opportunity to lead their transformation journey through a program called Jagran, the Awakening. By applying appreciative inquiry, we encouraged employees to recognize the organization's strength and envision a successful future. It wasn't just about solving immediate challenges, but co-creating a better version of the company. We facilitated conversations in batches using the Bechard and Harris change model, which suggests multiplication of positive dissatisfaction, preferred vision, and first step should be greater than all resistances. Simultaneously, we employed real-time strategic change to streamline decision-making, break down silos, and improve communication. This collective effort led to a company-wide revival, significantly enhancing both operational efficiency and employee engagement. Today, I am joined by Rajiv Dubey, a visionary industry leader with a distinguished career in international labor relations.
First of all, the definition of culture that I want to work with as I answer your question. What is culture? It's the way people behave in an organization, especially as they go around taking business decisions. So for me, culture manifests itself in behavior. It is the way we behave, especially as we go around taking business decisions. Okay, so that's the definition of culture. What are the levers that an organization has to create behavior? And we go to the old HR levers. Right? Every organization has it. How do you recruit people? How do you onboard people? What is the performance management system all about? What is the reward and recognition system? The talent management system, learning and development, the communication system. So these are the HR levers. All organizations have them. Some are consciously deployed. Some may not be conscious of them. So what is it that distinguishes then one organization from another, in addition to whatever strategy or purpose you may have? It's culture created through how you use the HR levers.
Rajiv is the former chairman of Mahindra Insurance Brokers, Mahindra Steel Service Center, and Mahindra First Choice Wheels. Rajiv holds a degree in economics from St. Stephen's College, Delhi University, and furthered his studies at the Delhi School of Economics. He earned his MBA from the Yale School of Management in the USA. He joined Mahindra in 2004 after a remarkable 29-year career with Tata Group, which he entered as a member of the Tata Administrative Service in 1975. His tenure included 21 years with Tata Steel, followed by leadership roles as CEO of Tata Metalics and later Rallis India. Rajiv retired in 2020 as the Group President, HR and Corporate Services, and CEO Aftermarket Sector, and a member of the Group Executive Board of Mahindra and Mahindra Limited. In addition to his corporate achievements, Rajiv has had a distinguished career in international labor relations. He recently retired as a member of the governing body of the International Labour Organization in Geneva and served as a board member and vice president for Asia of the International Labour Organization of Employers in Geneva. He has also led as the president of the Employers Federation of India and the National Human Resource Development Network. Rajiv's extensive contributions have also seen him actively participate in the steering committee and National Executive Council of FICCI for many years. In today's episode, I'll be exploring his insights on the importance of cultivating an organizational culture that actively engages every employee in the ever-evolving, technology-driven business world. Now, on to this insightful conversation with Rajiv Dubey.
Hello, Mr. Dubey.
Hi.
Welcome to my podcast series, AI to AI, or Appreciative Inquiry to Artificial Intelligence. First, I extend my heartfelt thanks to joining me on this inaugural episode, sir.
It is my privilege and equally my honor and joy.
Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot. Sir, I have, you know, fond memories of working with you at Tata Metalics, the organization which was transformed under your leadership. So, sir, could you please share some interesting memories from the transformation of Tata Metalics, which happened through Jagran movement, and how the principles of appreciative inquiry and large-scale interactive process were applied to revive this company?
So, Sanjay, thank you. I'd like to start off by saying that the transformation was not due to me. It was the work of a few hundred people, including you. So it would be very presumptuous of me to say that I was the sort of transformer. I was merely one cog in the wheel. But Sanjay, as you remember, the starting point was our belief that there is almost unlimited potential in every person and in every ecosystem.
Yes, sir.
And our task really was to create those conditions under which we could unleash the potential of people and the entire ecosystem of Tata Metalics to achieve our purpose.
Right, sir.
So the starting point was, we asked ourselves, why are we here? And what is it that we need to do? And we did that actually collaboratively with all our stakeholders. If you remember, it wasn't three or four of us sitting in an air-conditioned room and deciding all that. We actually used the large-scale interactive process where we had all kinds of stakeholders who were there. Customers, our workers, employees, members of our supply chain, some competitors, industry observers, our shareholders, all of them. And we actually co-created, if you like, our purpose and our vision and our goal, and actually also created a sort of real-time strategic change agenda and an action plan, at least for some period of time. So essentially, Sanjay, it was that which we did. Unleashing of potential of an ecosystem by working collaboratively with our stakeholders to identify what the questions were and then co-creating the answers, and believing hugely in the unlimited potential of people and doing our best to create the conditions under which people could be at their best.
Right. Well, I remember that, because I joined this company in 1995, company was struggling on everyday basis. And things like appreciative inquiry or large-scale interactive processes type of approach, they were like, I would say, completely contrary to the, predominant belief there. And also completely different culture, I would say. So I would like to understand from you, how did you kind of think of sort of using, this technique and all that?
So, Sanjay, I have to travel a little bit back into my own history because I guess to some extent, as the CEO of the company, I had to delve into who I am, kind of a thing. You know, who am I? So that was really a starting point. Who am I for me and, of course, for our company? But you will, I don't know whether you are aware that before I came to Tata Metallics, I was the general manager of the town of Jamshedpur, where, you know, a lot of the, and before that I was in various positions in Tata Steel. They were not large positions, they were not P&L kind of positions, but they were always groups of us and we always had objectives and goals. So a lot of these ideas had been tried out, and basically it was my philosophy and my beliefs and my value systems. Now, I don't know where they come from. Maybe that's the, that could be another podcast. Where do you get your values and your belief systems from? But it was these values and belief systems, and they had been honed and tried out and experimented with very successfully, I would say, especially in my 2-year stint as the general manager of the town. And you know that the town division was 6,000 people. There was no municipality, there was no mayor. So we were performing the tasks of a municipal corporation and a mayoralty. And therefore, it was a fairly large and complex operation with lots of moving parts. And it wasn't really, Jamshedpur is not a company town. It is a mixture of company, private, and there are all kinds of people. And you have to work very closely with the community. You have to work very closely with people who are not your company people. You see, working with your company people is relatively simple because we are all used to, you know, process, strategy, techniques, metrics, all that. But here we were dealing with, you know, people who were not familiar with this. There were good people, there were bad people, there were sadhus, there were business people, there were mafia, you know, all kinds of people. So I had had some experience in working with diverse people and getting them together and creating a common goal, a war cry, and then how we got people in the town division, including those who no one had ever paid any attention to. So our Safai Karamcharis, for example, the sewage plant operators, you know, all kinds of people. And we got them together and we created a Josh, and we said, you know, we are going to really transform the town of Jamshedpur. We'll involve the students, we'll involve the citizens. And it was just an amazing experience. So there was a little bit of confidence. And then we were working with an amazing character called Anil Sachdev and ECS. So they actually provided the technical details, and we worked very closely with them. So we have to give full marks to ECS and to Anil Sachdev, because without them, I would not have been, I had never heard the word LSIP. You know, so we depended on them for, you know, getting the technology, but the spirit, the purpose, the values that were driving us, because this is not a 100-meter dash, it was a 4-year thing. So we needed actually a huge amount of commitment, and there were failures around the way, and we needed to be committed. And it was a group of us who were there, you know, including yourself, including the union people, workers, everybody. So so I don't know whether I'm becoming too much of a stream of consciousness narrator here, but essentially it was this: a belief in some principles, some experience in the town division, and before that in the sales branch of which I had headed, and then, you know, working with ECS to get the sort of technology of LSIP, to get the technology of AI. But technology is in its own place. It is in the context of a purpose, and it's in the context of a vision, and it's in the context of values. So maybe we are sort of getting into your next question, I don't know.
Mr. Dubey, I must tell you that, you know, you are really like, you know, epitome of great human being, so to speak. I always felt that you are very humble, very, very kind person, very I mean, this is actually what, this is the way I have always observed you. Sir, my next question is that, you know, how the principles of appreciative inquiry can be applied to ensure that the development of artificial intelligence remains human-centric?
So first, I have to make an admission. I'm not an expert on AI. But of course, AI is becoming like electricity, right? Everybody will have access to it. Everybody will have access to all the information that we want, anytime, everywhere. The real question is, what do we use it for? What are the questions that we are asking, which we want AI to solve? Okay, so that's one part. AI will be available to everybody. It's already there. There's a lot of AI probably that is already being used in this very interaction. In doing the recording itself, I'm sure there is a fair amount of AI being used somewhere. I don't know. But my own belief, and there's a lot of, I think, literature I have read, which says that technology, and I'm using AI and technology sort of synonymously, but obviously there are other aspects, and AI is a catchword for a lot of sort of could be different moving parts that create this ability to deal very quickly with a lot of information and provide data analysis and so on and so forth. But the fact is that ultimately, what are we going to use that AI for? And is it for human beings? So far from technology replacing human beings, they may do that in some form. It is human beings working with technology to solve human problems.
That's right.
So whenever you have human beings interacting, and especially when you have human beings interacting with a technology that can dehumanize humanity and values and purpose and empathy, you know, all the so-called soft things will actually become even more important. That's what I feel. That's what a lot of research. You know, I was connected with the ILO, the International Labour Organization, which deals essentially with what is called blue-collar worker. But the principles are the same everywhere. And there's a lot of research that they use. ILO has a huge research wing, and they were doing a huge amount of work on the future of work. What will work look like? What will workers look like, and what will the workplace be, right? These are the three essential questions. And lo and behold, at least the conclusions that they are coming to, and you know, and I've been involved quite a bit in that future of work study, I am very clear that human values, empathy, appreciative inquiry, respect, ethics, governance, these are going to be central if we are to use AI for the service of humanity, to solve human problems. The danger, of course, is that it can become an end in itself. We start praying at the altar of technology and say human beings are irrelevant or human beings are not required. That is a scenario, but I think that's a doomsday scenario. You know, technology is there. We should use it to solve human problems. And we have to then follow all the old tools and techniques that we used in Jagrat. I don't think any of them fundamentally change, except that now we have this very powerful, tool, if you like, called AI, which we should use for the betterment of humanity, for the betterment of human beings, for solving fundamental problems of the dispossessed of the earth. Now I'm talking slightly macro, but you can apply all these to at an organizational level also.
Let us take a short break. When we come back from the break.
So what is it that distinguishes then one organization from another, in addition to whatever strategy or purpose you may have? It's culture created through how you use the HR lever. Right. So that's the technical answer, but it's also a commonsensical answer. How do you influence behavior? It's all these things. What kind of people do we recruit? What is the training we give them? What is the communication that we are doing? You know, what is the purpose in the context of which we are creating strategy and structure, processes, metrics? What kind of behavior are we rewarding?
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Let us dive right back into the episode.
Sir, my next question is that in your view, what role does organizational culture play in embracing AI technologies? And how can leaders foster a culture that encourages collaboration between human insight and artificial intelligence?
So, Sanjay, so now you're sort of getting me on to a subject which has sort of possessed me for many, many years, and especially in the last 15, 20 years in Mahindra. So, first of all, the definition of culture that I want to work with as I answer your question. What is culture? It's the way people behave in an organization, especially as they go around taking business decisions. So for me, culture manifests itself in behavior. Of course, it has a base of beliefs and values, but ultimately culture manifests itself in the behavior of people. And from an organizational viewpoint, which is the sort of context in which we are talking, it is the way we behave, especially as we go around taking business decisions. Okay, so that's the definition of culture. Is culture important? Of course, we have the famous Peter Drucker quote, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." But to me, it's so obvious that how do you convert a strategy into action? It is through human beings who may be using other factors of production, but it is human beings and they have to behave in a certain way to produce certain results. Nice. They can produce good results, bad, but it is the interaction of lots of behaviors that is producing performance or lack of it, success or failure.
Right?
Nice. So, what are the levers that an organization has to create behavior? And we go to the old HR levers, right? Every organization has it. How do you recruit people? How do you onboard people? What is the performance management system all about? What is the reward and recognition system, the talent management system, learning and development, the communication system? So these are the HR levers. All organizations have them. Some are consciously deployed, some may not be conscious of them. So what is it that distinguishes then one organization from another, in addition to whatever strategy or purpose you may have? It's culture created through how you use the HR lever, right? So that's the technical answer, but it's also a commonsensical answer. How do you influence behavior? It's all these things. What kind of people do we recruit? What is the training we give them? What is the communication that we are doing? You know, what is the purpose in the context of which we are creating strategy and structure, processes, metrics? What kind of behavior are we rewarding? What kind of people are we, you know, putting as leaders? You know, how do we have performance conversations? What is the meaning of performance appraisal? You know, do you or do you not use for me, the abhorrent forced curve. So, what I'm saying is that you create behavior technically through the HR levers, but most of all, I believe, Sanjay, it is through the way leaders behave. You know, we are all looking, and, you know, we have enough experience, Sanjay, you and I, that you can take the same HR levers. But if the leaders are behaving in a way that is completely at odds with what you're trying to achieve through your HR levers, it's the behavior of the leaders that will finally prevail. So the leaders as role models becomes very critical. So you have to have purpose, you have to have strategy, structure, processes and metrics, and then you have to have the culture created through the HR levers. These three put together in tandem, it's a Trimurti, if you like, that produces results and produces organizations that differ from each other, either produces competitive advantage or disadvantage, right? So, answer is all these things, but finally, it's the way leaders behave, because that's what we experience and that's what we, you know, tend to use as role models. So, I'm putting a very heavy cross on the frail shoulders of frail leaders. But you can have the best purpose, best strategy on paper, best HR levers.
True.
But if the behavior of the leaders in their everyday life, it's every twitch of the eyebrow, if you like, it's every breath they take, every step they take is being observed. And so leaders have to live the culture that they want to see. Now, I'm not being very original. Gandhiji said this, right? You have to be the change that you want to see in others. And that's actually the most powerful thing. But by itself, it's not enough. It needs the support of purpose, strategy, structure, processes, metrics, and the HR levers, which are operated through large numbers of people. But the key to all this, I still believe, is how leaders behave and present themselves. Do they live?
Very fascinating, sir. Very, very fascinating. So my next question is, what do you think, what are those skills and qualities leaders should possess? And that too, an AI-driven sort of, time where you have AI-driven workforce. And I would also like to understand from you that all these skills and qualities of leaders, do you think that the requirement have changed over time? If you compare with the requirement in, say, 25, 30 years ago and today?
Yeah. Okay. So there are several questions in there, Sanjay, and I'll try to, if I miss out something, please just remind me. So I think fundamentally, the questions or the qualities and the skills have remained the same. But there are two things that AI or technology generally, and the rate of change of technology, has done. It has accelerated everything.
Right.
And therefore, change has become far faster. And if you look at an organizational picture, you have what is called the VUCA world, right? VUCA stroke Bani. Now they use the term Bani, but it's essentially volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous, brittle, anxious, non-linear, all these words are there. I mean, things are changing. Plus, there is a pushback by all stakeholders because there's a lot of information available. People also have hopefully more food in their stomachs. So they are not going to sit back and take oppression and injustice as easily as it happened in the past. So, voices will be heard. So there is VUCA stroke Bani in the environment. There are major changes taking place in technology, demographics, geopolitics, all these tectonic forces acting there, leading to VUCA stroke Bani. There is a pushback, plus we are interconnected, hugely interconnected. So the new normal in which we have to operate, and I'll just tell you why I'm going through this big song and dance about the new normal, because that has implications for how organizations have to move. Okay, so we said that it's VUCA stroke Bani plus pushback plus interconnectedness. In such a scenario, for businesses to be able to serve their stakeholders better than their competitors, you would require proactive and iterative decision making right through the value chain. Right? So this is one. Number two, it will need a very deep understanding of stakeholder needs to be able to take these proactive and iterative decisions right through the value chain. The implication of these two is we need distributed leadership. The old command and control model will not work. Now you have to ask yourself, under what conditions do we create distributed leadership, right? And now, you know, I can try and answer my view. How do you create distributed leadership, which is the implication of the new normal, which requires iterative stroke, proactive decision making right through the value chain, and which requires a deep understanding of stakeholder needs, right? So I think distributed leadership, A, requires clarity about the purpose.
Right.
And it requires the commitment to that purpose at all levels in the organization, right? Which means a huge amount of communication. It definitely requires strategy, structure, processes, and metrics to support that purpose. But the behaviors that are required for tomorrow's leaders, let me go into that, and I'll come to my 3+5 framework.
Sure.
And for that, of course, I have to thank Mahindra, Anand Mahindra, and the whole RISE initiative. But Sanjay, you will remember that a lot of these things were being used, although they were not articulated as such, even in Tata Metallics and in rallies also, right? So it's not that something has fundamentally changed, but the need has become now more powerful and people are more accepting. I mean, in our days, it was still the command and control model.
Right, sir.
Leader knows it all.
Yes.
He's, you know, he will give orders and you have to obey. That is the opposite of distributed leadership, correct? So now, what are the mindsets and skills, if you like, or behaviors? And so I would say, A, there is a purpose, right? So that's the starting point. That is the purpose. You need to have three mindsets. Number one, accept no limits. Number two, alternative thinking. Number three, above all, ensuring positive change. So these three are our pillars, right? They are our pillars. Now, and we can go into, you know, a lot more detail from an organizational point of view. How do you breathe life into these pillars? And I won't do that right now, but I will tell you the five behaviors, which if lived by leaders and by everybody, will bring these three pillars to life in the context of the purpose and in the context of strategy. What are those five behaviors? Number one, ability to use the whole mind, combining left brain and right brain. Number two, being a multiplier of energy, passion, engagement, and a sense of ownership. And I will depack all these if you want me to, but
sure.
Let me just get
sure,
through.
Sir. Sure, sir.
Third, knowing how to manage fear and leverage failure. Four, mindfulness in the sense of being open to all the possibilities that exist by not being a prisoner of our own past. And last but not least, trust, creating trust through authenticity, where I say what I think and I do what I say again and again and again. It is about walking the talk. It is about removing the mask. So to just summarize, and I know I have used many words, if you have the time and if you're interested, Sanjay,
yes, we do
go into all of them. But here is the overall thing. You asked me several questions and I'm saying that we have a new normal which requires distributed leadership. And distributed leadership is created if you have clarity of purpose and you have a strategy which is brought to life through processes and metrics. But the mindset is three pillars: accept no limits, do alternative thinking, above all, ensure that you're driving positive change in the lives of the stakeholders that you interact with. And five behaviors bring these three pillars to life. What are these five behaviors? Number one, using the whole mind, combining left and right brain.
Right.
Number two, being a multiplier, which is the opposite of command and control, and we'll unpack that if you want. Number three, knowing how to manage fear and leverage failure to create success.
Yeah.
Four, mindfulness in the sense of being open to all possibilities by not being a prisoner of our past. And finally, trust through authenticity. Now, that's one hell of a lot of stuff I've said.
Great, great. It's always very fascinating to listen to you, sir. Yeah, the best part is that, you know, every time when I listen to you, you are consistent, actually. So that clearly shows that this is your world view. And
it is
so that's the best part.
But it is a view. Many people don't like it also.
That's right. So, Mr. Dubey, actually, you are, you know, let me tell you again, you're a role model, actually. You know, you're a very, very ethical person, ethical leader, as I've seen, and highly spiritual person also. I know you're a spiritual part as well. So, sir, tell me, given your spiritual perspective, how do you see the intersection of ethics and technology evolving?
So, you see, because technology is so powerful, anything, any force which is powerful can do great good, it can also do great harm. It can be used for creating nirvana, it can also create hell. So you need certain guidelines, you can call it governance, and it also needs a very strong ethical base. So that, we take the so-called right decision. Right, I'm putting it in inverted commas, because you can always ask right for whom, what is the meaning of right. So I'm not getting into that. But increasingly, because you are dealing with such a powerful technology, which is going to be in the hands of billions of people.
Right, sir.
If it is not subjected to the lens of governance and ethics, there is a danger that instead of being a force for good, it can become a force for evil and pain and suffering. And therefore, it is very, very important that even as we get into more and more technology, we remember always that ethics, governance, humanity, empathy, respect, all these things will become, in fact, more and more and more required if technology and everything else that comes with it is to be used for the benefit of mankind at large. If we are to create a better world for all, if I may use such a pompous phrase, but that is what I think the pursuit of people should be. You know, how can we create a better world for all?
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Great, sir. Thanks a lot, Mr. Dubey. It was amazing to listen to you as usual.
So I just want to say that, you know, about spirituality and its relationship to business. See, what is spirituality? At the end of the day, it's the inner space. And the decisions that business leaders take is actually a manifestation of the inner space, of the values, of the philosophy. And therefore, to me, spirituality has always been something that has aided the unleashing of potential, or at least has the possibilities. So spirituality for me has not been something which is separate from my life, whether it be my personal life or my corporate life. Because in my corporate life or in my personal life, I am acting out my inner space.
Great. And great.
The word spirituality is a description of the contours of that inner space. And as you know, Sanjay, maybe you don't remember, but for me, three words have been my North Star, my compass, always.
Satya Prem and Seva. How can I forget, sir?
And one has to live these.
Great, sir. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time, sir.
No, it's my privilege, Sanjay, and I wish you all the best. I think you can do a lot of service to humanity by the podcast that you make, and I wish you all
Thank
the
you,
best.
Sir.
And it's
Thanks
been
so
a
much.
Joy working with you as a fellow traveler, and I look forward to continuing to walk down many more paths, less traveled and more traveled.
Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Woods.
Sir.
And let me end with this quote. For the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and I look forward to walking in the woods with you.
Thank you for listening to my podcast AI to AI, where we explore the significance of process excellence and people excellence in the age of artificial intelligence. If you like this episode, give us a thumbs up in your favorite podcast app and do subscribe to continue listening to upcoming episodes with industry experts such as K. Ramkumar, Praveer Jha and Sanjeev Lal. Feel free to connect with me through my website at www.sn10x.in and on LinkedIn, where you can find me under the tagline Molding Metal to Molding Minds.